This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2022, held at Horizon Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, on March 4 and 5.
Well, good morning. I think we'll get started here. We're discussing about CASB and how often I've been to CASB. Well, I must say it hasn't been very often. In my teaching years, I got to CMTI about every, I think there's only one time out of my 28 years of teaching that I didn't get to CMTI. But as far as CASB, I think I was at the very first one. But I don't know if Jonas got me there ever since. But thanks to Jonas, I'm here. My name's Eddie Martin. I was a teacher for many years at Union Grove Mennonite School, which is East Sorrel, Pennsylvania. Not that far from Shady Maple. Some people know where that is. And this is my fourth term out of the school. And as far as I know, I am retired from teaching. Some people wonder, do you miss it? Well, I miss certain aspects, but I don't miss getting back into the classroom full time. You wouldn't find me too anxious to do that. I'm glad I'm right here where I am at this stage in life. So today we're here, and I was glad I looked over my schedule a little bit, and I did not know Arlen Yoder. Here you are. I thought maybe that's you. I was glad to talk with him before this week, before he came here, because our topics were similar, and we could have gone down the same path, and we were actually sort of going down the same path, but we diverged a little bit. So if I repeat Arlen's, some of the things he said, that's just part of life, and we'll go on. So my title, I changed it just slightly. I think it would say trauma, children in the classroom, or something like that. I'm going to title it more accommodating the traumatized child in the classroom. And I got to remember, I'm talking mostly to school board. Is there any teachers in here? Okay, oh, quite a few. School, that's good. All right, so I'm talking to teachers and school board members. And, you know, we have, as a teacher, we all know that the more the students fit into the schedule, fit into the pattern, the easier it goes. But traumatized children, if they had, depending on how much trauma they had, they have a hard time fitting in. And so I have it broken down into sort of three parts: acknowledging the situation, acknowledging that there is a need, understanding that child, which is where I may overlap a little bit with Arlen, and then accommodating him in the classroom. That's sort of my three steps. I do have handouts here, but none of just today's topic. But you're welcome to take them with you at the end. I don't hand out handouts too quickly anymore when I'm giving a speech. I want your attention. Then you can have your handout at the end. You'll see that the one is titled on Understanding the Effects of Early Childhood Trauma, and the other one that I have printed out here is Accommodating the Learning Disabled Child. So that goes a lot broader than just a traumatized child. But I can use a lot of that from the Accommodating the Learning Disabled Child in the classroom. I can use quite a bit of that in here. I also have a few of Trauma in the Brain, which is where I was going, but then I realized he was going to touch a lot on trauma in the brain. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Don't ever forget that. And God has a plan for how children should be raised. And if we deviate from that, it creates havoc. It creates problems. And then you try to put these children into the school setting, into a mold. The better they fit in the mold, the easier. And it's more problems. I brought the common Tupperware toy along. And if you ever watch children play with this, you know, the young child, they're trying to stuff it in the wrong hole. Well, I think that's what we're doing at times as teachers and school boards when we're taking these children and trying to make them fit into our mold. They got to fit. And we're stuffing these into the toy, stuffing it into the wrong hole. And it's not going to fit. We got to adjust. And that's the whole part today. We got to realize there's a problem. For a young child that's playing with this, you got to help them see that's not the right shape. You got to go, there's a problem, and we got to adjust it. Just a common illustration. I think we're all agreed that children are valuable, and yet And yet, do we at times? Are we careful? Do we get rid of our biases? I was working with a young child at a school, and I say young, a third or fourth grader, the other year. And in that conversation with the school, I just sensed there was a bit of a bias there. He was not a biological child. He was in a unique setting. He wasn't adopted. Neither was he technically a foster child. He was given, the parents were given guardianship of this person while the mother is in prison. Nice young boy. So anyway, I stepped in to help. I'm sorry, I'm just using this as a story. And I'm going to come back to it. I stepped in to help him with the situation. It wasn't really my plan to work that way, but I did. And we got along well, quite well. And I'll tell more about the story later. Don't let me forget. But I think one of the things was he felt I understood him. And that's all it took. Now, yeah, I can see that why the teacher was frustrated though. When he was sitting, when I had him in a classroom by myself, he was slouched in the chair, then was up in the chair, then was here, and then was there, but he was engaged, and I could let him do that. It was a little tough when you have, and the classroom he was in, it was 12 boys and 4 girls. And some of the boys have had this similar amounts of energy as he did, but they were able to control it, and we'll come back to that. But you know, I was going to bring a little one that's a little, this is $20 bill, of course, it's maybe not as worth as much as it used to be, but I was going to bring maybe 100 along just to, you know, just get the thought. If I'd ask how many want this, now again, the 20 doesn't maybe mean as much, but you probably all raise your hands and say, hey, who wants a $20 bill? We'd take it without a question. Sure, I'll take a 20, you know. But I said, well, wait a minute. I crumbled up. Who wants this 20? It should be 100, but it's not. That'd be no room to do. But I think we'd all take it. It doesn't matter if it's crumbled or not. It's still $20. And if I put it on the floor and I stomp it around on it and rub it around in the dirt. There's no dirt here, thankfully. But I stomp around on it and say, okay, now who wants this 20? Or think of it as 100. We'd all want it. We still recognize the value. In these children that we're working with, that's the whole part. We need to recognize, first of all, that there's a situation. There is something like trauma. And it does affect the brain. And through it all, it makes it challenging because these children, just like, I talk a lot about ADD children, ADHD. One day they're engaged and they're right with it. And I shouldn't even say one day. One part of the day, they're engaged and with it. And the next part of the day, they're not. And he's like, well, I know you can do it. You just did it yesterday or whatever. And today they're gone. So, as a school board and as a teacher, before we can do anything for these children, we've got to realize, yes, there is a problem. These children need help. These children need to feel that you understand them. So, moving ahead. So now we acknowledge the situation. Yes, okay. Yes, there is a problem. We know that. But then the next question is, are you going to get involved? Are you willing to put the time and effort in to get involved? It's easy to acknowledge it's a problem. It's easy to say, sure, yeah, I can see that. But then are you willing to put yourself into it and do what it takes? And maybe you think, well, this is just taking too much time. Well, if you feel you're spending too much time or not enough time with a struggling child, remember that what you do for others is what you're doing for God. Just keep that in mind. And yes, a teacher can only do so much. So for you as teachers that are here, I understand 100%. Right now, this young fellow, I had another meeting with the school board. The principal, a board member, and so forth, too. And the father to do a little bit of brainstorming. And I do not blame the teacher for almost feeling burned out. And this is where board members, you need to come on board. Because a teacher is going to get burned out if they're constantly trying to give this young child all they need. He's a sixth grader now. And I don't want to jump ahead of myself too much, but as we deal with, for you as teachers, when you have a child in your room that you just can't quite keep under control, does it make you feel like a success? No, it doesn't. And we have to remember that's okay. That's okay if you don't feel like a success. God has a plan. God put you here for a reason, to be involved with this young boy's or young girl's life. And he's only asking you to do what you can. But school board, you need to be there to help support them. Give them what extras. Like for this young man, I really recommend that he has a room to get out of the classroom and where someone's there to work with him just one-on-one. Just give him a place to get away and to eliminate the stimuli for the time. And we'll talk more of that as we go on. So, again, acknowledging the situation, we need to be flexible in our thinking. We need to be flexible in our teaching methods. And school board, you need to be flexible. You know, some of the excuses that come up when there's situations like this, and Linford's not sitting in here, no. But he talked to me a little bit about, because he was giving a speech on enrolling, I believe it was. And one of the things that might come up as a school board, you might think, but this is going to cost too much to enroll this child. Well, okay, we'll enroll, but they're going to have to pay extra tuition. Not saying that that's wrong, but think about those things. But that's a common excuse. Costs too much. This child's too disruptive. And there might be that. Takes too much time. I'm not saying that every single child's going to be able to fit in the classroom. We had one at Union Grove that... I was there the year after I left. He would have been in third grade. I worked with him one-on-one. I was principal only for the last 2 years of my teaching career, full-time principal. And so I worked with this young boy one-on-one. And he, eventually, it was just too much. And the parents agreed it was too much. So what did we do? We left him at home. But one of our teachers, thankfully lived fairly close, went there every afternoon after lunch. And you might think that's counterproductive, but it wasn't for this young fellow. He needed time to run off his energy in the morning so he could sit down a little bit and think in the afternoon. And he was very traumatized. That was the worst that I think I've seen at Union Grove. And I'm not exactly sure where he is now. This year he was going to be back in the classroom, I was thinking a couple days a week. He wanted to bring him back in, but it was too much for the teacher. It just was literally too much. And he was too disruptive. But we still didn't abandon him. We tried to work something out that with the parents and with this young fellow. Going on. So, understanding the child. I'm sort of already incorporating that as we're going in here. So we know there's a problem. Are we really willing to invest our time and money into the problem? That's the first thing. Understand that yes, there's a problem, but I'm going to have to invest my time and my money into this. Am I willing to do that? Teachers, are you willing to do that? But school board also. But coming back then, now we need to understand that child. If you don't understand the problem, how can you fix it? That's in anything, in mechanics or whatever. If you don't understand the problem, you're going to have a hard time fixing the problem. And I don't know if I really like that, to use the word fixing the problem with the child, because they're special from God. But I'm going to come back to the thought of just understanding the child, that we can understand them and help them to grow. Thankfully, again, we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and our brain can adapt, but it takes time. How long did it take you to learn to walk? How long did it take you to learn to talk? We don't know those things. Our parents might tell us a little bit. But did you just hear words one day and the next day you were talking? No. It was repetitious. Repetitious. And so to help mold these young children's brains that have been traumatized, it takes a lot of repetition. We'll come back to that. Again, understanding the child. We need to think of all our students as special in God's eyes, as I just mentioned. And care enough and love enough to get involved. I would like to think, do all your students, I'm going to school board, do they realize they are special? What do your words, What does your tone of voice tell them? I hope they do. I have a poem I'm going to read. It is actually titled Special Needs Poem, but traumatized children are special needs. They say that I have special needs, and while that's partly true, the needs that matter most to me are the same ones you have too. I need to be accepted. I need friends that make me smile. I need a chance to learn and grow, feeling valued all the while. Sure, I need some extra help and some things I can't do, but I hope you'll see beyond all that. Inside, I'm just like you. Now again, that's geared a little bit more to a special needs, as we were thinking, maybe physically handicapped and so forth. But is it, I need to be accepted. I need friends that make me smile. I need a chance to learn and grow, feeling valued all the while. So before we, before you can really deal with this problem, you have to do that first. Understand them. Be their advocate. I failed to mention at the beginning, I had been working, the reason I got involved with this young boy, I am somewhat involved with Loving Arms Adoption Ministries, and they wanted to broaden their horizons a little more than just helping families adopt children. They wanted to go beyond that to where they're helping them in school. Now they help the families adopt. These children get into school, and then problems arise. Now, so that's, they'd asked if I would be willing to do so, and I did until COVID, and then it stopped. And in the meantime, I got considerably busier at work, so now I'm not quite as involved. Although I still, well, my initial mission vision was to be helping parents, teachers, and school boards understand the problem and work together to find a solution. Well, my first assignment ended up that I was helping the child directly. It wasn't really my plans. It worked. The school wasn't that far from where I work. I could get away at that time. But then it abruptly stopped with COVID. And then anyway, so that's where, one of the reasons I'm here now. We are available. I have a paper with my name and things on here. Sort of gives my vision as far as Loving Arms Adoption Ministries is concerned, Adoption Resource Ministries. But my main thing is understanding, helping to work through the problems. That's what I'm here for. My heart goes out to these children. I have several adopted nieces and nephews. My one nephew, my daughter taught. He really appreciated her. Why? Well, I think it was mainly because he felt she understood him. That was why. Understanding. So these children are going to have different learning styles, different ways of doing things, and we're not going to go there too deeply today. But they're going to need to be, you need to think outside the box. We need to. It's a must. Just to clarify, when does my topic end?
11:15.
11:15. Okay, good. I got to keep moving here then. So, these traumatized children will have triggers. And you've got to realize that. They're going to have foundations that are incomplete. And you're there to help them. They might be extra anxious. They might worry a lot. They may have sensory processing problems. That could be their trigger. And they'll react unexpectedly to some of the senses. They resist transition to change. Transition. They don't want transition. They want it to stay alike. Meltdowns can be common. How do you work with it? So I'm going to get into some of the how to work with, because I want to give you a little bit of time to ask questions too. So I think we understand that these children, their brains are not developed like ours. They will quicker be in that fight, flight, or freeze. That has been very well developed. Very well developed. And a lot of parents think, well, I'm giving them a safe place to live. I'm giving them food. I'm loving them. And yet they're still reacting like they do. Well, they need to try it out. A book that I highly recommend for people to read that get involved in this, it's an easy reading, it's an autobiography. Yeah, she wrote it herself, I believe. It's not just a biography. Autobiography. And it's three little words and three more words. Two books. Three little words and three more words. If you want to understand how these children think, she's writing from her own perspective. And the three little words are not, I love you, either. I'll just tell you that. So don't think those are the three little words. But three little words and three more words. Ashley, can't say the author's name right offhand, but it's... Now, I'll just say this. They are not... She does not mention God anywhere in her whole thing. So it's not necessarily a Christian perspective. But it's a very good... It's an eye-opener. And she talks about how she tested her adopted parents after they were adopted. She knew what she was doing. She was trying to get them apart, get mom and dad to disagree and everything. And they'll do it to you as teachers too. They'll try to get the teachers to butt heads and so forth. So as we work with these children, we need to understand what trauma has done to their brain and work with it. But before we even go there, I'd like to mention three things in accommodating this child. First of all, you need to develop a vision for each child in your care. And I'll say this directly. I think some of us are aware of the fact that some of the, like Red Rock and some of these places, facilities for children, got a little bit under scrutiny with the state. And I talked to one of the board members at Red Rock. He said, this is one of the best things that could happen. Because we must write down our, I'm going to use the word game plan, for each child now that comes in. We're going to stop looking at the symptoms and start looking at the root cause. And decide, okay, we're going to work with this and this. The state wants to see, what's your plan? He said, it's one of the best things we could have had happen to us. Because we were way too much onto the symptoms. And we as teachers and board, that's what we do when we work with these children. Well, it looks rebellious. Yes, it looks rebellious, but is it rebellious? It really looks that way, I understand. Develop a vision for each of your children. Looking for their strengths. Expecting the best from them. I don't have time to go into some of the stories that I have on that. But it's been proven. You sort of get what you expect. No one wants to be a failure, and these children don't want to be a failure any more than any others. But they already have it programmed in their mind, some of them, that I am a failure. So what's the use? You need to help them see the difference. I feel these children, none of these children want to be a failure. So, in saying that, we need to adjust our teaching methods. We need to see it as it is. So I'm just going to go over some of these thoughts that I have with dealing with this traumatized child. First of all, do not take the misbehavior personally. Don't take their misbehavior personally. That was one of my, I taught for 28 years. I'm not sure how long I was into the teaching until I could start realizing that my students' misbehavior, and not just my students' misbehavior in general, wasn't, very rarely was it personally towards me. Very rarely. Who knows what will happen outside the home before they came to school that morning? Think about yourself. Sometimes you might react to the cat or dog or your spouse or someone else quite harshly, and you later you stop thinking, now why did I act like that? Why did I do that? And you start going, oh, back here, this happened, and this is, I was working on my mind, and I responded this way. So for children, and especially these young children, remember that. Don't take their misbehavior personally. It might look like defiance. It might look like rebellion, stubbornness, aggressive. Don't look at that. They are very impulsive. Remember, I like to use a simplified term of their downstairs brain is very well developed. Their upstairs brain, which causes you to think before you react, it shortchanges. It just doesn't go there. We need to help develop those pathways to go there and to stop and think. And unfortunately, we think, if I tell that student once, now they should know. Okay, well, they did it again. So I tell them again. And after the third or fourth time, well, now I told you four times, and it might be four times in one day. But remember, I'm coming back to what I said. How long did it take you to learn to read? How long did it take you to learn to talk? What caused that? But repetition. These children need a lot of repetition. but it got to be done in a kind way, in a way that they understand you care. I like to call it tough love. Teachers and board, we need tough love for these children. Love, but a consistent love. These children need consistency, day in and day out, and it wears on you. I'll mention another book I think you should read. Dandelion on My Pillow, Butcher Knife Underneath. Dandelion on My Pillow, Butcher Knife Underneath. I have that one along. I did have a list of books somewhere, but I couldn't find it. But this is a good book. Anyone ever read it before? You did. I find it very interesting. Now, of course, when you read these books, sometimes it almost feels too good to be true. She's talking from her own experiences. How many read the book, If the Foundations Were Destroyed, Where Would the Righteous Stand? Now that one, some people, that doesn't sound quite right, real. They're presenting it in the best way. But I like what they're telling me, though. If the foundation is destroyed with these children, the foundation is not right. It was never right. You need to go back and build that foundation. If you had a house, bought a house, and everything looks fine up above, but they never did the foundation properly, you know down the road you're going to have problems. And the best thing to do is go back and fix that foundation. And that's how we should strive for these children. Now, in the classroom, that's more from the parental side. In the classroom, it's not really go back and build a foundation. But we need to keep that in mind. Remember that. These children never had a proper foundation. And we need to deal with them differently than we're going to have to deal with some of the others. It'll help us to be patient. These children need relationships. They need to build a relationship. You need to be building a relationship with them. And this will take time and patience. If you're missing one of the following ingredients yourself, don't start. If you don't have time, if you don't have patience, then best you don't even start. You got to be calm when you're working with them. They're going to love to just see if they can get you angry. They're going to see if they can just find your triggers. And they can read you better than you can read yourself almost. A lot of these children, that's one thing they're very well developed in. Reading facial expressions, reading your actions, sensing your words. And oftentimes they're pretty near right on. They might not always be right, but it's pretty close. So pray for calmness. Just calmly be consistent. No, we're not doing that. And just calmly. And the only way you can do that is what makes it easier to do that is understanding. They must feel you understand them. Coming back to that young fellow I work with, I feel that's why. Now, I'd like to share a little bit more about him. Okay, so there's a problem again this year. We sat down. It was a board member, the teacher. It was one board member. Teacher, father, principal, and myself. Unfortunately, I still feel almost guilty on this, but I just didn't see an open green light for me to leave work and go over to that school and work with him one-on-one again this time. But they were having problems again. And I found out that the teacher said, I don't really have a problem, but from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock or whatever, this certain sister teacher comes in and teaches, and she has a problem with him. But he, does pretty well with me, but she has a problem with him. I go back to the year I was helping. What did he have but a lady teacher? Then I asked the dad, how is it at home? Well, he said, I have no problem with him. Mom will have a little bit more struggle with him, but I have no problem with him. I said, okay, so his mom's in prison. He's probably unconsciously blaming mom for deserting him. I'm almost certain he is. They do this without you realize. They don't even realize it themselves. And that's why he can't get along with his lady teacher. It was the feminine role in his life left him down. And he is now, he doesn't even know it himself. I don't believe if I would go back, I would try to work with him on that aspect. He really enjoyed when I was there, and I didn't know that I got that much done. I helped him with math every time I went. And I helped him, and then we would take time to read out of a book that was about Emotions. Can't say the name of the book. And then eventually he wanted to pick the chapters to read. It was short chapters talking about emotions, different emotions. Because I felt he didn't understand his own emotions. A lot of these children don't. They don't understand that they're angry and so forth. They don't, it doesn't register because the brain isn't connecting. It's not connecting. So again, coming back to dealing with them, understanding. Be consistent, as I said. One of the big things is you need to build trust. That is one area they have lost. Who can they trust? And that's why oftentimes for these type of children, if you get involved in counseling with them, they'll go so far. And it's not just say teenagers. This can be adults as well. They'll go so far, but then they don't trust you to go any further. And it's just... Or you're getting too deep into the problem. You're getting to the root of the problem. But build trust. Make their brain feel safe. Not just themselves. You can say, well, I'm making them safe. I locked them. No, but their brain has to feel safe. And in doing all this, you have to determine their triggers. Maybe their dad wore boots. And it's that sound of the boots coming across the floor. Maybe it was something to do with the sirens. So as soon as they hear sirens, boom, it just takes them places. They do not understand cause and effect. And that's what's hard for us to do. We understand that if I do this, I know. I mean, even as a child, I knew that if I do a certain thing, mom or dad probably is going to say this or this about it. They don't understand that. It's not there. And it's hard for us to get that. One thing I've tried to do, and I did with this young man, is try to get him to buy in to what we want to do. You know, they have a mind. They can think. So start asking them questions. What do you think is going on? What do you think would be the thing to do for a situation like this? And maybe you'll have to give them some suggestions. But work with them. It's amazing. If you can get them to buy in to wanting help, which most of them do, and to see that they need help, that could be harder though, but just to see that need, it is possible that they might buy into your plan if you work with them. But as you're working with them, remember, this trauma freezes thinking. So if you're trying to get them to buy in and work with, you know, to think of what can we do, they might just zone out. You might not get anywhere because trauma can freeze the thinking. So is there a one-step fits all? No. So a couple of the key words I talk about today is patience, time, understanding. The more you can understand what's going on, the better. So can I tell you what to do in the classroom? Not necessarily. I like to have a place so where they could go by themselves. We had that at Union Grove. There you go. Our remedial teacher, she had corners in a room with dividers. Obviously, all rooms normally have corners, but she put dividers in there. And so if it wasn't their time to go to her, they could still go in her room and sit back at that desk and work. Get away from distractions, get away from stimuli, and also just a time to stop and think. Don't try to correct this child when they're in a meltdown situation, when they're all worked up. It's not going to work. It's totally counterproductive. Wait until they are calmed down. So that's why you can send them to that room, let them work there a while, and quiet down, calm down, and eventually you can go talk with them. Now, you need to have a room, first of all, that's one thing. You need to have a place, but then you also have to have a responsible person in that room.
That's right.
These children don't need someone that's just going to cater to them. Like I said, they need consistency. They need tough love. Tough love is one that's going to be consistent, and yet they're going to be understanding at the same time. So sometimes, as school board, what's the handy age level to put into those rooms, but the 16, 17-year-olds, and we'll put them in there. unless they had some experience with working with those children, that's a mistake. That's a mistake. Maybe they had a brother or sister that was like that, and because of that, they have totally understand it. Well, that's different, but that's what I told this school. I said, you need, for this young man, I said, you need a grandmotherly figure. Notice I'm saying a feminine name. A grandmotherly figure in there to help him. Or it could be a grandfather figure. Someone that's raised all their children. Maybe their children are still at home. But someone a little older. Or it could be, it wouldn't have to be that old. But I thought for this young boy, it would be great. But they should have been a teacher. And they should have had a little bit of a, well, if they raised all their children, they were a teacher. Don't get me wrong. But they should have a little bit of an experience with this type of situation. Just a little bit. Or be willing to dig in and learn about these situations. And then put them in there. Someone that can be consistent but loving. My wife didn't accept that. I even gave her a name. I said, but I said, I don't know if she won't find it, take the time. But you have to know your limits. So, any questions? I need to stop because that bell is going to go very shortly, according to that clock. Any questions? I didn't come with a blueprint. If you were looking for a blueprint for success, it's not there. Yes?
So you said a child of trauma is always looking how to make people in leadership butt their heads and do that. What makes that child to always be looking for confrontation?
That is a good question. What makes them? Arlen, do you have any question for answer for that? I'm not exactly sure what would make them want to do that.
If it's reactive attachment, it's that's their safe zone. I don't know, which is completely upside down. Mm-hmm. But if everything is going fine, they feel distraught.
Yes, you're right.
Don't ask me to explain that. It has something to do with the brain. And their experiences, it's upside down, mm-hmm. But that's how it is. They feel, if that is happening, then they feel like they're more okay.
I think they feel a sense of control.
A sense of control.
Yes, there you go. That's the word, control.
Control.
Yeah, I feel that's the main word. They're out of control when everything's going fine. And when it's not going fine, they're in control kind of. They're getting mom and dad or whoever to. Yes. Good question. Yes.
Well, along with that, now I don't have a lot of experience dealing with trauma children, but it's almost like when they can get people to butt heads, the focus is no longer on them.
Yes.
Now they can do their own thing.
Mm-hmm. But I believe also what Arlen said, they don't feel safe. They feel much safer when there's aggression. It's like you said, it's totally upside down.
It may have been the normal back when
your
brain was developing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At a very early age, they didn't have the trust. So when they sense that building, that I'm now going to trust, I'm actually going to give that control, or I'm going to begin to trust that person to take care of me, that's never worked for me before.
No.
So I won't do it now. So if I get in a fight with you, I've been there. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to get a fight, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I have a couple tools in my pocket. In fact, we'll pile them, and I'll come out. But giving myself to you in a trust sort of way is a skill or a capacity that is missing.
Yes. Yes, it's totally missing, and that it's just very, very difficult for them to actually trust. And what that book I mentioned about three little words and three more words, that's brought out in that, the trust. And she finally could trust her parents. What's amazing now today, she's married, she has a child or two of her own, but she's in the same type of field as her parents. She's an advocate for these children. She's out there adopting some. It's amazing. She is a miracle. But it shows that the brain is adaptable. It does, is plastic. Yes?
One comment, and I should have made this the other day, but since we have school administration and board, when we talk about the willingness to advocate, to allocate resources, at the state level, the money they get triples if the student has an, if the child has an IEP. So that could, if they manage to get an FAS label, an RAD label or something, then they can get an IEP. That's one of the reasons for all these labels. Mm-hmm. It's a big reason.
Mm-hmm.
And in Iowa, it triples. It goes from 13,000 to almost 40,000. Blink, just like that. That's a recognition of the tremendous amount of resources that's going to take for that person. So now we believe in Holy Spirit power. We believe in, you know, healing and all that. But we're fooling ourselves if we think that we're just going to be able to do this kind of with the same amount of human resources. That we're used to.
You're right. That's exactly right. Yeah, you're fooling yourself. Very good. Yes?
So is there something to keeping them, like when they're studying or whatever, to keeping them busy, like, I don't know, like a fidget spinner or...
We've used that.
Squish ball. Can't just study without doing something? Mm-hmm. Is that legit? Something to that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We especially find that, not necessarily traumatized children, just different children. We found that. At Union Grove, we had basically every of the lower grade rooms had a corner with a divider with a desk behind. Plus, we also had earmuffs. And, you know, at first, you had to get them to understand this is okay. Well, as the years went on, they were almost fighting over the earmuffs. We had to get more. There weren't enough corners in the room, but they would gladly sit at their desk with earmuffs on because we had multi-grade. So third and fourth was married together, or fourth and fifth was together. So while the one grade's being taught, they had their earmuffs on. They realized they could focus and stay and keep on teaching, keep on learning and doing the work. I realize my time is probably up here, but they didn't chase us out here yet. But yes.
Did you have any experience with the balls that you used to sit on instead of chairs?
Yes. Now, we didn't use them in the classroom, but the remedial teacher had them in her room for some. And if they didn't, if they were misusing them, then they had to go back to sitting on the chair. One of the big things is you must, as you're working with these children, you must strive to teach them accountability. That's a whole, your goal is to teach them, help them to understand accountability. This is what you did, this is what happened. And it's going to take a lot of repetition to do that. But yes, the balls, yes, that's one. And if you want to use them in the classroom, I'm saying you can't, you may not. But it's just that we didn't bother using them in the classroom.
We've used them, and I felt like they worked to a certain extent, but then there comes a point when they become a toy instead of what they were.
Exactly. That's what I would see with something like that.
Comment on your, you have to talk to them about it. Cause and effect is not there, like you said. And so what we know that the average child gets, so if they did something wrong, we punish them. Sure, you talked about it a bit, but they didn't know what's up. These children don't. So that you need to frequently not just repeat the instruction of what they're supposed to do, but say, this is happening because of that.
Mm-hmm.
10 minutes later, you say, this is happening because of that. And the really obvious cues are entirely missed.
Mm-hmm.
Some children, anyway.
Yeah. What have you read? If you read this book, or If the Foundations Were Destroyed, they talk about sitting and looking at the wall. You know, what did they call that? Quiet? No, they have a name.
Strong sitting.
That's, in a sense, I feel a time for them to reflect. If I'm saying that right, Arlen, kind of reflect and think.
And the way they put their hands is somehow related to that.
Yeah. But they need a time.
Yeah, recenter or... there's another word they use, I can't think of it, but mm-hmm. get back to de-escalate.
Yeah, de-escalate is a good one. And that's what I'm saying with school, too. If you can have a place where they can de-escalate, just a spot where they can go, but there should almost, probably should be someone there in that room. But they don't have to really be paying attention to them at the time. Just have an ear open for them. Any other questions? Yes?
They often need more sleep.
Yes.
Have a spot where one child can get mad. I try to graduate a little bit from it, but it's about a year.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you can sometimes see their behavior go down, actually escalate after lunch. Yes, you're right. And that's for any child. That's one thing I can't tell parents enough. Make sure your children get their sleep. And for Grandpa, make sure Grandpa gets his sleep. I'll say that for my wife. Life just goes so much better if you can make it happen for the children all.